WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Country music is having a moment of popularity, yes, but also of reckoning with what and who is or isn't part of the genre. Take the backlash to Beyoncé's new album Cowboy Carter and her adaptation of Dolly Parton's hit Jolene.
Jolene, I'm warning you, don't come for my man.
This album is bolstering the call to acknowledge the histories and role of Black musicians and fans in shaping country music. Francesca Royster wrote about this in Black Country Music, Listening for Revolutions. She says this moment is an opportunity to think about the way the industry has excluded and been unwelcoming to Black people and to rethink the space. She's going to be a panelist at an event that reimagines what an episode of National Barn Dance, the radio show that's credited in part with popularizing country music, would sound like in 2024. I sat down with her to learn more about the history and future of this music. And she starts with sharing how she learned that her grandmother was a big fan of the barn dance show.
I found out from my dad's stories about my grandmother that she was a big fan. She loved to listen regularly. And it was a way to kind of connect to the South, to country culture in the middle of Chicago. But I also found out that she was teased for it, you know, by my grandfather and by her neighbors. It was something that she kind of did, you know, on the down low a little bit. And so to me, that tells me just the complex ways that Black listeners entered the country music culture and barn dance in particular.
And so we're clear, why was she teased?
Because I think, you know, coming from the South and being here in Chicago, there was really a pressure to assimilate, to kind of be part of Northern culture. Country music was thought of as, you know, not as sophisticated and, you know, to become like the right kind of Black person, urban Black person, you know, you were supposed to listen to jazz or R&B and urban blues. So I think she was feeling that pressure along with like the way that she talked and other kind of country ways.
Because she was part of the migration, right, from the South to the North.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
What excites you then, with all of that in mind and all that history, about this reimagined barn dance show in 2024?
One of the things that really excites me about it is that it gives us a chance to think about history, to think about the histories of exclusion, both kind of the self-segregation of African Americans from this culture, but also the ways that the industry itself was racially segregated and unwelcoming for Black listeners. So this reimagining gives us a chance to think about, okay, what if we knew what we knew then that we know now in terms of the importance of African-American roots in country music, participation and fandom, and try to rethink the space.
Why did you decide to participate?
Well, I really was excited about the idea of participating in living history. This is a way that the Chicago History Museum is getting audiences as well as educators and musicians and performers to help kind of create history in an imaginative and creative way. Mm-hmm. When I was writing my book, I was really aware of different erasures and silences in the history. And this is a way to kind of put ourselves back in it and kind of think about what's missing and what we want to know about this time period.
So on that note of, you know, the erasures, right, and the Black roots in country music, what do you think is important for folks listening to understand about the genre of country music today? And then talk about subgenres, especially Americana.
Sure, yeah. Well, part of the thing that I think is really important and that, you know, this performance can be a part of, but also like just thinking about the explosion of Black country music right now, mm-hmm. is that there's an awareness of the fact that Black people have been participants in country music culture, but often against the grain of the way it's been marketed. So I think that that's important, like thinking right at the very beginnings, the ways that Black musicians and songwriters and performers were part of this genre, thinking about the importance of the banjo, of course, as an African-based instrument, mm-hmm. and that we were, our creativity has been there all along, even though it's also been sidelined. So I think that that's really important. And, you know, country music has traditionally been a genre where Black and other folks of color have not felt as welcomed, mm-hmm. either by industry folks or by fans. And so often we've turned to other subgenres to make the music that we want and to hear it. Americana is a really interesting subgenre, kind of adjacent to country music, where you can hear much more of a variety of different kinds of sounds. There's less of a formula, less of an industry formula, I think, in operation. So that's been a place traditionally where Black musicians have kind of gravitated toward in terms of making music when making a career in country music has been difficult.
Yeah. What's the country music history in Chicago that we should know?
Well, Chicago as a place that has welcomed African-American and white Southern migrants, Latinx, a pretty very big Latinx community. It's a place where country music is kind of part of that that migration. It's part of the culture that all of these different groups are bringing with them, but from different angles. So Chicago has had a long history of honky-tonk and hillbilly bars that have been around, you know, at least since the 1960s. Mm-hmm. Uptown was a really important community for white Southern migrants. And so some of the bars that existed there, one of them at least is still there, Carol's Pub. So that's really an important part of Chicago's history. But I do think that the segregation that was happening within the genre also means that the spaces to listen to music, mm-hmm. and to drink and be part of the culture has also been segregated. And it's created kind of an artificial separation between African Americans, Latinx, and white folks who like this music.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
So in this moment, we do have to talk about Cowboy Carter.
Yes.
And by that, I of course mean Beyoncé's latest album release, where for fans of her will notice a different sound compared to what we're used to, right? She's tackling country music, folk. Your thoughts initially? I'm sure you've listened.
Yes, I've listened obsessively.
Me too.
I love this album because of those different sounds. But it really brings out the ways that Southern country identity has always been a part of Beyoncé's sound. And there's a way that she's kind of refusing to not bring that aspect of her culture, her Houston culture, together on the album. Mm-hmm. So you hear country, you hear some Zydeco, you
yes.
hear, you know, what
you hear blues.
It's like Texas music in all of its different ways.
All of its forms. Yeah, it's incredible. I remember that when the album was about to be released, she was quoted for an upcoming interview in a magazine as saying, you know, this isn't country, it's Beyoncé
yes.
music, right?
Yes.
Just sort of alluding to the uniqueness of what we were about to experience. There's been some discourse, though, Francesca, you know, surrounding the album, you know, folks speaking out in very racist ways, talking about, you know, country isn't black, right? You can't be black and country. And as if we don't have a space in this genre that we are so deeply rooted in its history. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, that kind of gatekeeping is something that's been pretty consistent. And if you look at the careers of other black artists who have attempted to make country music albums, they've also, you know, met that kind of resistance, whether it's Lil Nas X and Old Town Road back in 2019, or reaching much further backwards to Linda Martell, you know, in the early 1970s. As does Beyonce. And I'm so glad that she's on the album. I wish she was singing on it, but yes. I love just hearing her voice.
Yeah, she's talking on it. And I love the exposure that a new generation gets to Miss Linda Martell.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And her music is so smart. Like, if you go back to listen to Color Me Country, she's partly singing about black migration experience and the changing way of what it means to be black and Southern and maybe also Northern at the same time. You can hear all those elements on the album.
Yeah.
So it's really worth a listen.
As we talk about the new generation too, Francesca, I'm also reminded of Beyonce sort of, you know, introducing first-time listeners to some artists out of Nashville, black country artists that we might not have known about, right? I'm talking about folks like Tanner Adele and Shaboozy, right, who raps on a couple of tracks on there. Willie Jones, who's got a great, great rasp in his voice.
Yes.
I mean, what do you think about that, sort of bringing these younger artists, younger black country artists into the fold?
It's so terrific because they're bringing a great energy. Tanner Adele, I had a chance to hear at the Windy City Smokeout this past summer.
Incredible voice.
Incredible voice and a really enthusiastic audience. Like, she's really good at like getting people excited about her sound. She plays her own instrument. She has a big voice. And really intelligent lyrics, you know, about like romance and sexuality and dating, all kinds of things. So it was great to see that she gets, she's getting more exposure on this album.
Yeah.
And like thinking about someone like Willie Jones, who has also been working hard this last decade, also collaborating with other artists as well.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think that Beyonce is kind of taking up the spirit of collaboration and bringing people with her on this album.
Putting a nice spotlight on these folks.
Absolutely.
I think a well-deserved one, too.
Yeah, for sure.
You wrote in Yes Magazine that a requiem in white and Western understandings is to lay souls to rest. But on this album, quote, the purpose is to raise the dead, to animate histories and memories once forgotten or misnamed. This is an album meant to lift the lid off of the coffin of music that has grown stagnant, end quote. What stories are you glad to see come to center stage, Francesca?
Well, as we were talking about, like thinking about a figure like Linda Martell and really hearing her alive and well and very much like having her own take on genres on the album, I think is really powerful. I think about the history of Blackbird as a song that Paul McCartney wrote in recognition of civil rights folks and the Little Rock Nine in particular.
Yeah.
And then having this wonderful assortment of new black country music artists harmonizing and taking a verse on that song is also part of that. But also, you know, some of the ways that Beyonce is re-energizing classic country music songs like Jolene, you know, giving her own take on Dolly Parton's hit.
So good.
I love that as well. So I think in occupying the country music space, doing her own thing with it, but also like bringing in new artists and getting us to think about the history is part of this kind of impulsive requiem where, like I said, I don't agree that it's, you know, to lay the past to rest, but to really enter into the past and think about it and, you know, re-energize it as well.
Yeah. Now, you said back in a 2022 interview with NPR that country music sometimes serves as a way to cement whiteness and to exclude potential fans with different identities. I think it sort of alludes to some of what you've said today, but say more on this particular comment.
Yeah, you know, I think that there are ways that country music has been used as a place to express a kind of nostalgia for whiteness, for older versions of kind of white supremacy from earlier in our nation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, different artists have participated in that. Even artists like Merle Haggard, who I think has a kind of complex genre, sometimes his music has been used to kind of reinforce that idea. Mm. So there is a kind of politics of separatism that sometimes happens in country. Some of that, unfortunately, is also connected to some of the things that we're looking at, you know, in the show, like thinking about the use of blackface in the barn dance or on radio shows like the Grand Ole Opry. Like there are ways that separatism and kind of caricatures of blackness have been a part of country music's history. It's not the only part, but it definitely is part of that history. So, a difficult part of that history.
Yeah, unfortunate history, for sure. Well, leave us with this. Your thoughts on the future of this genre. Where are we heading?
I've really thought about this a lot because I think that where we're heading is partly led by superstars like Beyonce, but I think it's also a future that might be shaped by the fans who've been listening for the first time and hearing their stories in country music, black fans and other fans, thinking about like just a wider diversity of voices within the genre, which I think will really change the kinds of stories that we hear. Mm-hmm. I was listening to Orville Peck's music the other day and kind of watching his terrific video with Willie Nelson.
Yes.
And, you know, he's really taking a bold position of getting us to think about sexuality and country music, which has been, you know, a taboo in the genre. So I think we're in a future where folks who have a lot to put on the line, like Beyonce, yes, are pushing the genre and bringing in new listeners. And then that makes room for other listeners, other performers who can take an even more maybe radical and pointed position to have their say as well and to be heard.
Francesca Royster is author of Black Country Music, Listening for Revolutions, and will be part of the panel featured this weekend at The Hideout. Thank you so much for making the time for us.
Thank you, Sasha.
Thank you. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Linnea Dominic, and it was edited by Meha Ahmed. Come back to the Reset Podcast every Saturday for interviews with great musicians from Chicago and beyond. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.